Welcome to the podcast Punkt.ua with Tinka
and Vadim. This podcast is dedicated to Ukrainian studies.
We conduct interviews with scholars from the UNDIPUS project,
which stands for Undisciplined Pluralizing Ukrainian Studies, Understanding the War in Ukraine.
Join us on the Punkt.ua podcast.
Our today's guests are Dr. Olga Plahotnik, junior professor Dr. Roman Dubasevich, and Dr. Martin Hansenmann, three persons working on these projects here in the beautiful small city of Greifswald, in a corner of northeast Germany. You three are working at the University of Greifswald on a project titled UNDIPUS, an abbreviation for Undisciplined Pluralizing Ukrainian Studies, Understanding the War in Ukraine. In short, this is a project with five sub-projects and six scientists. Each of you has a sub-project on which we will focus in details on separate podcast episodes. Today we want to talk about the main issues regarding this project, like Ukrainian studies in general, the ideas and history behind your project, the war in Ukraine, and how it's affecting scientific work. So let's start.
Yeah, hello also from my side, you three. Very nice to have you here. The title of your project starts with Pluralizing Ukrainian Studies. And for me, I thought, reading it the first time, does it mean that Ukrainian studies maybe are not pluralized enough, that you think about, okay, we should do a project? So that's my first question. If you like, Roman, you can start. What is the status quo when we talk about Ukrainian studies? How is the situation on this world? Maybe what are the main topics Ukrainian studies are dealing until you started your project?
Yeah, thank you, Tinka, for your question. Perhaps I will start with a short description of the main motives of initiating this project. In general, very often it is a question of quantities. So before the Russian aggression against Ukraine, there were almost no Ukrainian chairs in Germany, and very little places where Ukrainian studies were practiced, and Greifswald was one of them, and the University of Viadrina was another one. So the first moment was the feeling that we don't have enough expertise in Ukraine, pluralizing first in a very literal sense of producing more knowledge about Ukraine.
As minimum in Germany, you mean?
Yes, in Germany. And the second question, perhaps even more important one, was of course not only the question of the quantity, but also the question of quality. What kind of knowledge are we producing? And here, one of the driving moment behind this initiative was a kind of discontent about the direction Ukrainian studies were going between 2014 and 2022. And the main moment was a feeling that the end of Euromaidan and the outbreak of separatism in eastern Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea made something with Ukrainian society and also with Ukrainian academy. The Ukrainian studies were becoming more and more the advocates of Ukraine, of Ukrainian political course and geopolitical self-positioning, and less important critical agency.
Okay. And maybe I would like to go on with Olya, because you wanted to pluralize this point of views or these motives. I was thinking about what perspectives were maybe missing when you're a psychologist, am I right? You're a sociologist and you're a cultural scientist. What do you think, which points were missing in Ukrainian studies?
First of all, I would like to echo Roman's opinion that we need more centers of Ukrainian studies globally producing knowledge on Ukraine, about Ukraine. My experience is mostly connected to the UK and North America, and there are very few Ukrainian studies centers. The general area of Slavic and East European studies is very much Russia dominated for obvious reasons. And also when there are centers of Ukrainian studies, they are also specific in disciplinary sense. There is always a hierarchy of disciplines which perceived as very important, with history and political science very traditionally understood on the top. And for me, as a queer feminist researcher, researching feminist and LGBT activism and sexualities, I never felt fully belonged to Ukraine, to those Ukrainian studies. Yes, in from my perspective, pluralizing also would mean producing more critical knowledge, more feminist knowledge, queer knowledge, anti-colonial, anti-racist, and so on.
That's quite interesting, because you, Martin, you're a linguist, right? This is a very nice, fusion of you three. What did you thought? How can you enrich the Ukrainian studies with your focus? It's quite interesting.
Yes, thank you. The main problem which I see is that Ukraine has now a very particular linguistic situation, that we are very much focused on the question of where and how to use either Ukrainian or Russian. But in this issue, we mostly forget that there are much that Ukraine has a very big portfolio of languages. And these languages are very often underrepresented, especially in this context and especially in this discussion. So we have, especially in the south and in the west of Ukraine, we have many regional and minority languages, and we do not know much about how they position themselves when or with regard to this issue. So that is the first thing we should, according to my opinion, pluralize. Because we have, apart from Russian and Ukrainian speakers, we have, of course, people who are bilingual, but who have another language which they use at home. So they have to decide whether or when they use which language, or they are told, you have to use this language, you have to read this newspaper, you have to learn this or that at school. So this is a big problem for minorities in Ukraine who opt for another language than Ukrainian or Russian. And in my opinion, it is really worth to have a closer look at this perspective of these people and of these groups.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So we went deeply into the main concept of this project, but I want to talk more about development of this project, because you have additional colleagues in Gliesin and Regensburg. So I'm curious, how did you find these people? Because these people and you, all of us, are from very different fields of science. So maybe we can talk about more how this project was developing and how you found all these colleagues.
Perhaps I could start. As I mentioned, one of the problems of Ukrainian studies after 2014 was that they were increasingly forced into the position of advocate and mobilized. One of the functions they should also fulfill, not only to do the research, but also to function as a kind of tool of propaganda, or function as a as somebody who will defend the interests of Ukrainian state, yeah, or promote the Ukrainian nation building. And to a certain degree, these both functions can go along with each other, but there are moments where they can start contradict and even hinder each other. And of course, there were very few people who were able to see this problem, because this task was felt as something very pressing after the Russian support of separatism, supporting the unity of Ukraine, supporting the Ukrainian political goals. And I discovered that they are still some people who are looking critical, for example, at the inner Ukrainian situation, not only at the aggressor, at the neighboring state, which can develop certain ambitions, but also looking critically on the reasons or cultural precondition or cultural prehistory of the war. And this was, for example, Alexander Chetenko from Gießen, who was working almost simultaneously with me on, and independently of me, on the analysis of the inner Ukrainian cultural fight or culture or Kulturkampf between Ukrainophone and Russophone Ukrainians and different representations of Ukraine, of Western Ukraine versus Eastern Ukraine. And there was also Alexander Zabirko in Regensburg, who was, for instance, also very interesting in using different theories, philosophy of law, for instance, or history of economics to analyzing the representations of different regions in Ukraine. And these were my first German-based colleagues. And then I discovered that they are people like my colleague Olga Plachotnik, who became the principal investigator and the leader of our project, and also Martin Henselmann, who added this very important linguistic dimension. So this was a brief prehistory of our fusion, as Stinka formulated it.
Yeah, thank you. Olga, you mentioned that you previously was working in Canada. So now you're working in Germany. Do you feel difference how Ukrainian studies are going here in Germany comparing to how it's going in Canada?
Indeed, I worked in Canada, in Edmonton, at the University of Alberta. I was a postdoc there, and I was also a teacher of sociology. And I never thought I would live in Germany, and my knowledge of German language was absolute zero. And suddenly I received an invitation to join the project, and the title already existed. It was this Undisciplined and so on. And the title clicked immediately to me for several reasons, and I think this is a very rich word with several layers of meaning. So because I'm working mostly in Foucauldian tradition, so first of all it referred to the famous Discipline and Punish book, and it also meant to me that the critical perspective on this traditional disciplinary division in contemporary universities, where ostensibly interdisciplinary or cross-disciplinary research are welcomed, but practically it is very hard to do them because of the specific disciplinary based design of the universities. And it's also funny to me that we applied with this project to the Ministry of Education and Science under the rubric small disciplines, like Ukrainian studies as small disciplines. And to me, it was also a bit like ironic perception of this label of small disciplines, like we are sort of doing a little bit subversive academic work. I joined the project and participated in writing the application, and I'm glad I did this. I do feel I'm in the right place with the right people.
Okay, Martin, as far as I know, you was working before in Hamburg, in Dresden, in Vienna, and now you're here in Greifswald. So now you're working here only in this project, or maybe you fell in love with this beautiful city?
Thank you. This is a good question. Well, I would say in some kind both. But of course, having learned more about the project, I was immediately interested in participating in. Because it is well known that Greifswald is a very important center for Ukrainian studies, as we told, or as Roman told in the beginning, that we need to diversify and learn more about Ukraine, especially in this very difficult situation. And that was, of course, a very crucial point when I was immediately interested in participating when I got the possibility. So, yes, I would say that both is a very good inspiration for working atmosphere.
The second part of the project title is Understanding the War in Ukraine. And I remember when Vadim and me were talking about to make a podcast with you, full-scale invasion, war, civil war, there's so many expressions running around in German, in English. And my first intuition was to ask Martin, do you know more about how to name these events, these horrible events?
Yeah, I think, of course, all of what you mentioned is possible to apply because all of this is true. So it is probably difficult to find a single name for what is going on now, and the description is always the same about the happenings and the terrible things that are going on in Ukraine today. So I'm not sure if we should limit us to one of these names, but of course we can prefer some of these terms, depending on the context or depending on the situation.
One could add perhaps to it that some of them are highly, highly charged in the political discourse. So, and also mobilized and instrumentalized by the antagonists, by aggressor and the victim. For example, in the Russian discourse, it became usual to speak about this war, about the beginning of this conflict in Donbass as a civil war. And normally Ukrainian voices or so-called Ukrainian voices strictly rejected any kind of recognition that this war, which started in Donbass 2014, had elements of civil war because they were Ukrainian citizens fighting against each other on both sides of the conflict. Forced by free will. But perhaps coming back to the title of the project or the subtitle, Understanding the War, I was playing a little bit, and you were playing a little bit, with this idea of with the German word Verstehen, yes? Because we had the perception that very often to explain the war was understood as justify the war. So, and of course, this war has a very long prehistory, and many of us saw that it is our task to understand, to unravel this history, and very often, paradoxically, instead of positively receiving the work on the long prehistory of the war, many Ukrainian politicians and also scholars started connect it to an ethical dimension of Verstehen in the sense of justifying, legitimizing, and so on. So, with introducing the idea of understanding, we wanted to counteract this negative usage of the word Verstehen, and wanted to rehabilitate the idea of understanding as analyzing and looking at the long prehistory of the war, because one of the problems in this war is that as soon as it started and it produced a great shock within Ukraine, outside of Ukraine, already in 2014, the long prehistory of this war is somehow repressed or forgotten, and it is very interesting to understand it in prehistory, perhaps to know how to look for the way out of this war.
I would like to offer a more personal perspective. I'm not a political scientist and not a linguist to mull over the nuances of meanings, but I use the word war, I call it war, from which started in 2014. I lived in Kharkiv in 2014. I remember this horror and anxiety in air, and I remember the sound of medical helicopters delivering wounded people to the military hospital. I lived in the region of Kharkiv, which is most close to Russian border, and I remember just looking to the direction of Russia from my window and thinking whether we will hear the sound of Russian tank tonight or things like that. And I remember thousands and thousands of war refugees coming from Donetsk and Lugansk region to Kharkiv. I volunteered in organization which helped refugees, Stancia Kharkiv, quite famous now. And and strangely enough, in official documents, it never was called a war. It was called ATO, anti-terrorist operation. Then the title changed to the joint forces operation, so on. But I have no doubts that it's a war. It felt like that, and I thought about it like that. So when I wrote my thesis in 2019, I used this word, and it was never questioned by other people, because this is how it corresponds to my positionality and my personal experience. So I would call it the war which started 2014 and escalated into the most horrific form in 2022.
So during every war we have such thing as the informational war. So, and if you're working with such topics as a war, especially like during the war, it's sometimes very hard to work with such topics, because immediately somebody can accuse you of in spreading propaganda or siding some side or siding like some propagandistic narratives. So it's always like matter of war of narratives and war for truth. How to talk about this war, and you already mentioned how this hard to like how we can name this war, how it was working from 2014 till 2022, and how it's working after that. So and. I want to ask, like, how this full-scale invasion affecting your work? I mean, like, in terms of maybe some conflicts with institutions or with people, or how people react on it when you are raising maybe some very sensitive topics during your studies.
Yes, absolutely. I already mentioned that. At a certain moment, I felt there was a conflict between the role we are pushed into as Ukrainian academics, intellectual, and the role we have to fulfill and the critical agency we have to exercise as scholars, as also as public intellectuals to a certain degree. And it can even start with a definition what the war is, as we already discussed, and with the localization of the start of this war. For some people, the start of the war was the massacre on Euromaidan, yes, or the moment where Ukrainian police started beating up its own citizen, and these citizens responded also in violent way to their own police. So for some people, the war started already with shootings and killing, mutual killings on Euromaidan. But of course, placing the origin of the war already on Euromaidan could have been perceived as already an ideological statement, for example, favoring pro-Russian or narratives of Ukrainian, at that time of Ukrainian opposition, the government force, Viktor Yanukovych. So it is always a very, very, very difficult issue. How do you name it? And it has become increasingly difficult to exercise critical agency, because once the war started, once you had to identify with one particular side and to subdue or even eliminate your critical habits or critical practices. This was perhaps a very general feeling. And of course, if you, for example, were researching as I did, the cultural cultural conflicts within Ukraine which were predating this war. For example, the tension between Ukrainophone Ukrainians and Russophone Ukrainians, and such phenomena as Orientalization or Inner Orientalism, the idea that some parts of Ukraine are less attractive or inferior in terms of civilization than the other. For example, saying that Western Ukraine is perceived as the center of Ukrainian national building, Ukrainophone parts of Ukraine, and other parts of Ukraine are kind of secondary or derivative. So speaking about this, these problems could be understood as a placing a part of responsibility for what was happening also on Ukrainian society, not only on Russia. And people like Yurkin Strelkov, the Russian commanders who were sent to ignite and to fuel the violent conflict. And it has become increasingly difficult to speak about this or about phenomena Olya mentioned, like militarization, increasing militarization of society. The war for me started palpably, not in terms of media, but palpably when I came in the summer 2014 to Lviv, and just for the first time in my life saw the children playing the war again, something I did as a Soviet child. In the late
you mean on the playground or in school or what?
On the backyard of a house. Ah, okay. I was walking as a kind of tourist through my home city, and when entering the house of my relatives, I was seeing a flock of children playing and shouting at each other, "You are separatists, you are Ukrainian soldiers." And that was the moment when I really palpably felt that the war is coming in Ukrainian society. It's penetrating, it's even the places which are not directly involved in 2014 into the conflict.
So, Olga, when you are working on producing some critical knowledge or critical studies, it's always too hard, you know, if it's war going on, it's always too hard, like, you will get it.
Okay.
okay. Olga. So when you are trying to work on producing some critical knowledge, it's always like about producing some maybe unpleasant things to especially unpleasant thing about subjects that you are that you're studying, that you're searching. So during the information war, do you have these fears that some of part of your work can misused in a way? Are you facing this dilemma?
Good question. Thank you. Am I afraid of that? Well, I can't say I don't care, but it's sort of a part of the process. So, first of all, anything can be co-opted, misused, instrumentalized, manipulated, anything. Of course, it happened to me in the past, and it will probably happen in the future. So it just makes me thinking more carefully about what I'm saying and how I'm saying this. And I just would like to clarify one thing about critical knowledge. So you mentioned that. In my studies, I reveal some unpleasant thing about Ukrainian society. Yes, I do, but it is also very important to understand that Ukraine is not an empire, and when I produce my knowledge about Ukraine, it has to be simultaneously critical, analytic, and sharp enough, and not to reproduce the colonial cliché image of Ukraine as a backward country, sort of corrupted by Soviet regime and things like that. So for me, as a researcher, it's a very difficult task, and this is the main dilemmas, main sort of dilemmas I'm facing. But I think we are also one of the ways to work in this direction is to use different formats and speak to different audiences. So I just want to say that apart from my individual research, like writing papers and presenting at conferences, I invest a lot in teaching learning processes, and our Greifswald Ukrainicum Summer School is one of such venues. 2022, we organized a summer school which was entitled Thinking Under Bombing, Feminism, Gender and Queer. And it was a school where we directly discussed the war, the ongoing war in Ukraine, in from a feminist and queer perspective. And we had a brilliant keynote, Cynthia Enloe, who came and participated in the school. And actually, Cynthia wrote about this school in their recently published book. And Cynthia also dedicated the entire book to Ukrainian feminists.
What's the name of the book?
Let me check. Yes, 12 Feminist Lessons of War, 2023. And as far as I know, this is the first book which focuses on the full-scale war, Russian war on Ukraine and feminist responses to it.
Yeah, thank you. It's very interesting. I would like to read this book. I hope I will read it soon, because I was participating in the summer school and it was very interesting.
Yes, you both participated. I had this book. So you sent me the book I will lend it to you.
Thank
sure.
you. So, Martin, what about you? How war is affecting your work?
Yes, thank you. I think the most effect on my research issue is that we cannot do field work as planned. So it is very difficult and even dangerous, especially if we look back to the beginning of 2022. It was not clear how the situation would develop and how or if we could do field research. So I think this is, at least as concerning my sub-project, a very big problem. But of course it is a problem for the whole project, because all of us planned to some extent to stay in Ukraine or to go there. And now, especially if you see, if you have a Ukrainian citizenship as a man, even if it would be not sure if they would let you back. So that is, according to, or as far as I can see, the biggest problem.
Yeah, I want to add that in Ukraine it's forbidden to leave the country if you have a male gender marker in documents. And you in the age, I think, from 18 till 60, as far as I remember.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a big issue.
Hmm. Yeah, I would come to an end with you all. And the last question about, it's super good that you investigate how's the situation now, from where does this conflict may come, this ongoing long story you mentioned, Roman. What do you think, for who or for what could be all this understanding, your results, your analysis could be useful, maybe to solve the conflict, to stop the war, or to find a solution for the war? I mean, we cannot say how it will look, or we can just say how we wish it, but what do you think the results, in which way they can maybe useful to end this war or to end this conflict?
Yes, I think the idea that this knowledge can somehow perhaps contribute or to make a little contribution to the ending of the story is, of course, a very ambitious and idealistic goal, and with time, with experience, you understand that very often the wheels of history or politics or geopolitics are so powerful that people in charge, politicians, do not always pay attention to small knowledge of the small disciplines, to perhaps to rethink the approaches, to rethink their strategies. At least there's this hope, of course very idealistic, very academic hope, so if there are some seeds of this knowledge, they can multiply, and more people have the access to this information in a situation where the space of information is mobilized or homogenized, yeah, in this or either or another direction, that these diversities, this plurality, can contribute to something, perhaps not yet, not at the moment, which is very tragic, so you feel very helpless observing how things are deteriorating, how things are getting more and more catastrophic. But at least it is this kind of Sisyphean work trying to establish archives of knowledge, of ideas, which can be useful after perhaps the people in power will understand that they cannot resolve this situation only by force.
I would like to add that it is of course very difficult to predict what can we do or what can we improve, but what we can do for now is, of course, give a more clear picture of what is going on in some detailed development. And second, we can try to compose a certain mosaic of different perspectives of current Ukraine. So, and that can, of course, help to develop our horizons in certain directions and to understand why things are so difficult and why it is so difficult to find a solution.
It would be great, of course, if the knowledge we produce help to stop the war, save lives, it's of course would be the most ambitious aim. I'm thinking about my research as more community oriented, community centered. So I would be satisfied, and this is my short term goal, if my work would build more solidarities, more support between communities especially more vulnerable communities in Ukraine and abroad, build dialogues and sort of just make lives more livable.
I'm very thankful that you participate in this podcast. Thank you for being with us today. So it's just it's our first serial podcast, next podcast we will go deeply into your subjects, into your studies, with you, Roman, with you, Olga, with you, Martin, and I'm already can tell that next podcast we will dedicate it to Roman's subject, and like trauma, toxic masculinity, heroism during war, and producing of narratives within culture, politics, and so on and so on. So I'm very curious. It was a punctue. My name is Vadim, and with Tinka.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you, Roman, thank you, Olga, and thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was the podcast Punkt.ua,
which is part of the Unipus project at the University of Greifswald,
with Vadim
and Tinka,
supported by the German Federal Ministry of Education and Research.
Join us on the Punkt.ua podcast.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.